I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is not John Anilio, and his name is not Patrick Hester, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds, episode number 160.
I'm totally confused right now. I don't know who I am. I don't know what's up or down. I don't know what's left or right. That's Patrick Hester. He's an author, blogger, and a podcast dude. He's a Hugo nominated, perhaps by the time you hear this, a Hugo winning podcaster. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a singer, songwriter, and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And this week we are once again joined by David Annandale, who's an author for the Black Library of the Warhammer 40K books. His horror novel, Gethsemane Hall, was published last year by Dunedin Press. And for Turnstone Press, he has written a series of thrillers featuring rogue warrior Jem Blaylock. He also writes nonfiction about movies and video games, teaches film, creative writing, and literature at the University of Manitoba. You can follow David at his website, davidannandale.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at david_annandale. And David is a regular on Skiffy and Fanti's Shoot the WISB podcast. David, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What does WISB stand for?
World in a Satin Bag.
World in a what and bag?
World in a Satin.
World in a Satin Bag. Yeah.
Now that
you guys keep saying it at the same time. I still don't know what you're saying. So, David.
World in a Satin Bag.
Okay, thank you.
That was the name of Sean's blog, Sean Duke's blog. What's the significance of World in a Satin Bag? What does that mean?
That you'll have to ask him. It's one of these things where I feel some shame in saying that. I'm thinking I should know that line from somewhere. The back of my mind is saying, is it T.S. Eliot? But no, probably isn't. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, that's thanks, David. Now I feel like an idiot, too. Yeah,
we can all be collective idiots together.
That's Patrick and I are used to that. That's how we roll here. But thank you everyone for joining us again this week. We're going to talk about lots of interesting things. We're going to focus our main topics today on the Warhammer 40K. We are going to flit about from thought to thought that will probably at some point touch upon the Warhammer 40K universe. of which David has written a few novels in that world. And so I'd love to learn more about that because I've read a couple of Warhammer 40K novels, but I don't know a whole lot about the world other than the few novels that I have read. So I'm curious to hear a little more about it.
David, when we chatted on SF Signal, did I tell you that I had bought the DVD, the movie?
Ultramarines?
Yeah.
No, I don't think, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I still haven't finished it.
Now that's a CGI or animated thing, right?
Yeah, I've had no desire to finish it.
Mm, interesting.
And now Fred Kish is rolling over in his coffin.
Yeah,
because he's immortal. I think he is a vampire.
Fred's still alive.
No, he's immortal. He's a vampire.
Yeah, I know. Fred is on the SF Signal, the Three Horsemen?
The Three Horsemen, yes. Yeah. And they're actually breaking out. They're going to get their own feed.
Ooh, good for them. That's mm-hmm. cool. Are they going to record it themselves then? And that way you don't have to do it?
They've always recorded it themselves. I've never recorded it for them. Jeff records it, and then he sends it to me, and I've been making it pretty for SF Signal. But now they're going to do their own thing on the Horsemen because we basically identified that the world of podcasting needs another podcast with three white guys. So...
Well, I think they are definitely of the get off my lawn variety
of
podcasters.
They are, yes. The original concept was essentially, what are the names of the two Muppets that set up in the
Staffords
and Waldorf or something like that.
I think that's it's something like that. Stafford and Waldorf.
It was essentially that. It's like, what do you think of the show? Well, you know, it sucks. It's terrible. You know, that was the, you know, they were the grumpy old men. That's what they wanted to be, mm-hmm. the grumpy old men. So
That logo Jeff's been working on is very much reflective of that.
It is, yeah. It's a great logo. Yeah, he's been he's been tweeting that out. So by the time this hits, I think their third episode, which is their first in their own feed, will already be out.
Cool. That's I don't know. I love all those guys, so it's I'm glad to see that they're doing that. That is that is very good. All right, good. Well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
I was trying to pause and I totally screwed it up.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. So I'm going to go first this week. I'm going to do my pick this week. And my pick is an album, and it is by a band called The Winery Dogs. And The Winery Dogs are a new group, and their album is self-titled, called The Winery Dogs. And it is a power trio, and it consists of Mike Portnoy, the drummer from Dream Theater, Billy Sheehan, the bass player from Mr. Big, and he also played... Billy Sheehan played with Mr. Big. He also played on David Lee Roth's solo albums in the 80s, Eat 'Em and Smile and Skyscraper.
I'm just a gigolo.
He didn't play on that. He played on like Yankee Rose and all those tunes, the more rockin' stuff. And the singer guitarist is a guy named Richie Kotzen, who has had a solo career. He started out as a 80s metal shredder. He was a member of Poison for like one album when they kicked out CC DeVille, and then he was a member of Mr. Big when Paul Gilbert left the band. Anyway, I love all three of these guys, and I was excited when I heard that they were getting together to do this album. And the album came out about a month ago, surprisingly cracked the Billboard Top 30. I just basically mentioned three old guys, three old white guys who are in old bands, and they put out this power trio album that cracked the top 30. So it goes to show you that for certain people, there's an audience for this stuff that is dying for some good music, where a lot of people went out and bought this album. And it's a great album. Even though a lot of these guys come from like a progressive background and a metal background, it's a pretty there are elements of progressive rock and there are elements of metal in it, but it's very much like a power trio kind of thing, like almost like a little bit of Cream, a little bit of Led Zeppelin and The Who and all that kind of stuff. But the songs are great. It's like they're really good songs. They're really well-written, big choruses with some great playing, some like killer guitar playing. And I was lucky enough to be able to go see them live. They actually played in New Jersey about 40 minutes from my house, and they've only done about three or four American dates, because as with a lot of this stuff, doing great in Europe and Japan, but you know, not as many people know here. So they've only done three or four shows in America. So I was really psyched to be able to see them live, and they were killer live. They were great. I saw them in a small theater that only holds about 500 people, so it was great. And even cooler is for people who are fans of The Metal Show with host Eddie Trunk. Eddie Trunk lives in New Jersey and is basically responsible for putting this band together. And he came out that night as well and introduced the band, and it was really cool. I really had a great time. So their album is just called The Winery Dogs. It's up on Spotify. If you do that, that's how I listen to it. And I'm sure you could buy it at iTunes and all those places too. So that's
you, you mentioned he was a shredder?
A shredder, yes.
And does Master Splinter know? I mean, I'm just
curious. You know, he studied under Master Splinter, but then broke away for a little while. Wait, so Splinter's the rat and Shredder's the bad guy, right?
Correct, yes.
I should know that because my son and I have watched that new cartoon.
I know.
I should know that off the top of my head. But he hasn't watched it in a while.
I lobbed one right over the plate for you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I screwed it up.
You swung, but you didn't hit nothing.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. But that's my pick this week, The Winery Dogs. David, what's your pick this week?
My pick is a movie, Antiviral, directed by Brandon Cronenberg. This came out, it was out in Canada last year, and I think it hit the States some months back in limited form. So it might well be out on DVD by now. And it is Brandon Cronenberg is the son of David Cronenberg, and the influence of the father is very clear here, though Brandon is also forging his own stylistic identity, but a lot of familiar body horror going on here, but also a distinct science fictional premise where in the near future, celebrity worship has reached the point that people will purchase diseases that have been that celebrities have suffered from, so they can have the same virus injected into them as a way of becoming closer to celebrities. And we also get things like meat that is grown from the cells of celebrities, so you can go to a restaurant and eat your favorite celebrity. And it's a very smart film. You got Malcolm McDowell in an unusually sympathetic role, who shows up midway through the film. And it's both completely fantastic in some of the imagery, but at the same time, it is a very pointed commentary on our current celebrity culture and the objectification, particularly of women. And so for all of the bizarre things that you're seeing on the screen, you realize that it's really just one metaphor removed from where we are right now.
Cool. I think I read something about that with like the diseases and like the celebrity diseases. So I must have come across a review of this film at some point. That sounds really interesting. That's cool. So it's Brandon Cronenberg is his name?
Is the director. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Very good. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
If the stars align and everything falls into place correctly, this Friday, September 13th, at 7 p.m. on Nickelodeon, we should see the very first episode of The Legend of Korra, Book 2, Spirits.
Okay.
That's going to be my pick. Now, I mean, they've played around and they've said they're going to do a second season and they haven't really done it, or they, you know, they've kind of teased it. They've done this, they've done that. Right now they're saying Friday, September 13th, 7 p.m. Nickelodeon, Legend of Korra Book 2, Spirits Begins. So that's going to be my pick because I really, really enjoyed Book 1, which was Air. Mm-hmm. And it was a completely different take on the whole Avatar thing. It's very accessible no matter how old you are. You know, kids are going to love it. I thought it was great that they went with a female Avatar. You know, and I know a lot of fans were, the boy fans were embracing that just as much as the girl fans were. So it's a really interesting show. They've kind of taken it into a little bit further along the timeline now. And there's electricity that's basically, the firebenders are making the electricity in the factories. That's a job that someone can have. And they've got cars and planes and different stuff like that. And it's just it's an interesting show. And they're moving forward with Korra and they're going to do Book 2. So that should be hopefully this Friday.
I'm assuming you saw the original series then as well.
Yes, but I didn't see the original series with Aang until I went over to my friend Quinn's house, and he's got two boys, and I went over there for something, and his son, you know, came up to me, and he shouted something, he stomped the ground, and then he pushed the air, and I'm like, what kind of pills is he on? and Quinn's like, no, it's Avatar.
He's airbending.
And I'm like, what? He's like, well, he's an earthbender. And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. He's like, oh man, you know, it's this huge thing. And now actually that kid is, he's in martial arts and he's doing like, actual competition martial arts, which I think is just awesome. Cool. But, yeah, they basically said, oh, it's this great show and you'd really like it. And you should check it out. And I went to Netflix and they had it on Netflix. And so I watched the entire series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And then M. Night Shyamalan ruined everything. Yeah,
he ruined it. I wouldn't even watch it. Yeah, no, I will go on to say that I think I haven't seen Legend of Korra yet, but hopefully I will catch up with that. But I did watch the entire original series, and I think it's some of the best storytelling done really in any medium. I just think in terms of just overall arc and consistency and just having a clear plan and how they just went about, I thought it was just perfectly executed. I was not watching it with my son. I watched that all by myself a couple of years ago, like, and I loved it. I really did.
Well, in Legend of Korra, the book one is available on DVD. It's like $15 for the entire season. So, I mean, it's a really decent price. And if you are a fan of the original Airbender, Aang, just go to your comic book store because they have continued the adventures with Aang and all the other kids in comics. So it's that whole thing that they do now. It's like season 8 of Buffy, only at, you know, blah, 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 or Angel After the Fall, or the, you know, the Firefly stuff. It's all out there in comics. So go check that out.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm totally like looking up on Amazon right now. I was like, all right, do they have it on instant video? Because that would be really cool if they have it. You have to buy it. They don't have it. Because I have the Amazon streaming service too, mm-hmm. but they don't have it. And you can buy the individual episodes, but no, you can't. You can't stream it. Oh, that's a bummer. Okay. Anyway.
And she's the avatar after Aang.
Right.
So Aang grows everywhere. Up, you know, and she's training with one of his sons.
Cool. I will have to check that out. That sounds really cool. Well, on to our main topic today that we're going to flit about is the Warhammer 40K universe, which David has written several novels in that universe already. I read a couple of the Dan Abnett books, and it's a huge universe. So, you know, David, maybe you can just give, I'm sure some of our listeners are very familiar with Warhammer 40K. And even if you're not very familiar with it, everybody's heard of it, I would imagine, that listens to this show. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the universe and how it developed and got started. I mean, does it start purely as a game and then the novels came later, or how does this all work?
Yeah, it began with the game, which is just celebrated its 25th anniversary last year. Whereas Black Library, the publishing arm, celebrated its 15th. So okay. The game came first, and it's a universe so set as the name suggests in the 41st millennium, the catch line is that in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. And that, incidentally, is where the term Grimdark originally emerged.
So they're all Klingons.
considerably darker than that. The human side of conflict is represented by the Imperium, which over the course of 10,000 years has devolved into a very superstitious, unbelievably tyrannical and bureaucratically overwhelmed system. They are constantly at war with the Eldar, who are they're like space elves. The orcs, which are orcs, but that have laser beams and spaceships and all kinds of other weaponry that Tolkien's orcs would have given their left arms for, and various other races. And the great cleavage in the Imperium goes back to the equivalent of the war in heaven 10,000 years before, where half of the forces were essentially corrupted by the gods of chaos and fought against the forces of the Empire. So there are distinctly Lovecraftian elements here. It's very, very much space opera on the grand scale. So we have planets exploding right, left, and center, vast armies clashing by night, along with all kinds of monsters, and the stories their tone will vary very much depending on who the focus is. So if it's on the Imperial Guard, it'll be on a much more human scale. So because the characters themselves are humans. So my novella Yarok, Chains of Golgotha, focuses on the character Sebastian Yarok, who's a commissar in the Guard and therefore a non-enhanced human, whereas the Space Marines are these genetically enhanced superhumans, near gods in power armor, and so there's perhaps another level of the mythic added to their clashes with their foes.
Go power armor.
Now, what's because there's so many books out there, is there a timeline that someone can find and read it in sort of an order, or do you just have to sort of work your way through it?
No, that would be, by this point, that would be a truly formidable task. And there isn't an official timeline as in some other shared universes. Well, where there is a timeline is in, say, the rule book, which lays out the major events of the Imperium. But the books are actually quite open to new readers, in that there are individual series, often in the forms of trilogies or linked trilogies, and there are lots of standalone books as well. So my first novel within The Death of Antagonists focuses on the Black Dragons Space Marines. They're Nick Keim has a Black Dragon character in some of his Salamander books, there aren't any other Black Dragon novels prior to The Death of Antagonists, so it stands alone. And a lot of the other individual series will be ones that the readers can just jump right into and get us into the universe very quickly.
And you know, John, it's kind of funny that you mentioned where to. I think your question is like, where do you jump in?
Right.
And there's a gentleman. I think you've met him, and you may be aware of him. His name is John DiNardo.
I'm brilliant.
And one of the things that DiNardo really really loves is when I misremember our conversations, and then quote them on the various podcasts. He just absolutely loves that. One of the things that when I talked to David about the 40K Hammer books was I did mention that DiNardo had resisted the books, and then finally kind of jumped in. And he reminded me that I was completely wrong and I completely misremembered the entire conversation. So I'm going to make something up instead. I'm going to say that he was stuck in a rut reading his Strawberry Shortcake novels. And he mistook one of the 40K Hammer covers for a How to Build Your Own Iron Man Armor book that he was really interested in. So he picked up the Warhammer book and he read it and he really enjoyed it. And so he ended up just jumping in. And I think the moral of the story is record your conversations with me if you want to prove the way that they actually were laid out. The other moral is that you can jump into the Warhammer 40K universe at any point, and I think you'll enjoy it. That has been the gist from the people that I've talked to. It's like it's not quite like it's not linear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be. It's you don't have to start at the beginning to enjoy it. You can just jump in anywhere.
No, where you would want to probably start at the beginning, more so would be the Horus Heresy series, which are the books that take place in the 31st millennium, which they are the recounting of the beginnings of and the unleashing of the terrible galaxy-wide civil war, which leads to the situation in the 40K books. And so there you can jump around and the books will certainly make sense if you read them on their own, but there is an added richness if you read the Horus Heresy in order.
That's not required. I mean, you could, but you don't have to.
No.
Is that what Dan Abner wrote, or is he?
Well, he writes both. So, and I think the conversation that that Patrick was remembering, if I'm remembering the podcast episode correctly, I think he had just read the Eisenhorn trilogy.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Which is quite absolutely marvelous books, and that's in the 40K universe. But he has written several of the Horus Heresy ones, certainly the first one, and various other books, including for instance, No Fear, and that book, which recounts the cataclysmic battle of Kalth, then has led to the anthology Mark of Kalth, where a number of us have short stories that build on what happened in that war. So look at the aftermath or the aftermath of that particular battle, I should say.
Now, did you play the game before you started writing the stories?
No, I started playing the game after I read the stories and started writing them. I was a fan first of the books. I remember the first time I read one, and it was, as I mentioned in the past, it's like everything I love in genre fiction in one spot, and it was like, why wasn't I informed earlier? This is awesome.
Well, when I was working in Hell, one of my coworkers, when she found out what I do, you know, and it's my hobby and in my personal life with all the science fiction and stuff, she's like, well, my boyfriend and I, we play Warhammer. Do you play Warhammer? And I had to tell her no. And when you talk about jumping into the books, I think jumping into the games can be equally kind of daunting to think about. It's like, where would you start? You know, how would you even jump into the games?
Well, they do make it open to new players too. I mean, they have the basic sets for new arrivals, and the stores they also have events for new players to get to know the ropes and as well the painting of the figures. I'm lucky in that one of my close friends Dave Villalago has he's been playing the game. Well, he still has the issue of White Dwarf when the game was announced. So he's been playing it for its entire history, and he's been my mentor in helping me paint my figures so they don't look like Heath Ledger, helping me sort of with basic strategies and in the gameplay.
Yeah, I bought some D&D figures very, very early on in my D&D career, and I sat down to paint them, and that did not go well, and it was never, ever attempted again.
Now, David, the book that I read was First and Only, Ghost Number One. So what part of the timeline does that take place in?
Well, the... I forget the precise year that one takes place in. That, I believe, was I wouldn't want to be quoted on this, but that I think was one of the very first, if not the first, of the at least of the current of the Black Library's books. I think there were some. I'm certainly going to feel stupid if I get my history wrong here. There were novels that were being put out prior to the establishment of the Black Library publishing arm. And again, my apologies to Nick and company if I'm getting this wrong. But I think First and Only was the first there. But again, in terms of the timeline, it's the different series tend to be more, well, it's certainly in the 40K, but the books, as they come out, they jump back and forth, right? Okay. So some series will take place before others, mm-hmm. or they'll have their own internal timeline, right? So you read First and Only is the first of the Gaunt's Ghost books, and then if you read the Gaunt's Ghost series, you'll track him through the years, getting older, and so on. And some other series or some other books might take place before or after those ones.
Cool. Yeah. No, it's I love sort of discovering this stuff when there is these big universes to be a part of. And, I think it's just it's really cool. And I know we have some listeners and we have some friends of the show, a la Fred Kish and others, who are just super, super into the Warhammer. It seems like you have a couple of people like me who read a couple of novels, and then there is folks like Fred and Stefan over at Civilian Reader. I know he's pretty invested in the Warhammer world as well. And
my first review for my first Warhammer 40K short story. He was the first one to write about my stuff, so I owe him a debt of thanks there.
Cool, cool, very good. Well, I think that is a good place to wrap it up. So, David, once again, now you had something you wanted to tell our listeners about.
That's right. Various things coming out, but the I do want to plug the Kaiju Rising Age of Monsters Kickstarter. This is from New Ragnarok Publications, and 18 of us have stories in this, and it's going to be it's a very exciting project to be a part of. So everybody, please go check out the Kickstarter and send us all of your money.
And so David's website is davidannandale.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at David_Annandale. And what's the name of all your Warhammer books? We just talked about Warhammer for a while. What's
your
Warhammer
book? So there are two novellas out. Mephiston, Lord of Death, which was a limited edition release. So if you didn't get it when it came out, you're going to have to wait some time before it appears in another form, but very much available now are the novella Yarak, Chains of Golgotha, and the novel Death of Antagonus. And coming out in the not too distant future, I have a novel about Sebastian Yarak, and I'm working on another project that involves the Space Marine chapters of the Salamanders, the White Scars, and the Raven Guard. The precise nature of this project to be announced at a later date.
Very good. Very cool.
You're such a tease.
I have something really cool, but I can't tell you.
Yeah, no. Keeping it under my hat. Yeah.
For me this week, you can just check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And one thing that I've been doing a lot lately that I would like to let people know is that I write a weekly blog and I send it out to my mailing list as well. And usually there are thoughts about creativity, creative process. And I've been doing that pretty much. I send that out every Sunday. And I've personally gotten a lot out of it because many of the people that are on my mailing list are creative folks too. And I get lots of great email back from people talking about it. And a lot of people will actually go and comment on the blog as well. And it's sort of like this nice little community. And there's a lot of people that listen to the show and a lot of people that are just kind of involved in our community in general. But it's really nice and I've really been enjoying it. So if you want, when you go to my website, you just click where it says blog and that'll take you to my scifisongs.blogspot.com blog. I really need to like update my blogging thing and get a WordPress blog or something. But that's if you just go to my website and click blog or just put my name and you'll find it anyway. But you can read the last couple of blogs that way or you can join my mailing list and you'll get it that way on Sundays. And I've really been enjoying that. And a lot of folks seem to be getting a lot out of it. And if you're listening to the show and you're already on it, thank you for your comments and feedback because it's really been helping me a lot as an artist. And I'm happy to sort of bring up these questions and have people talk about them. So thanks. That's for me this week. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Nothing.
You're still basking in your Hugo win?
Or my Hugo loss.
Loss.
We're recording this, we have no idea.
I know.
Right now, the Hugo is Schrodinger's cat.
Yes.
We don't know if it's alive or dead. But we know it's in the box smelling things up.
Yes. That's what cats do.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I hope as we're listening to this, if we're not cringing that you lost, so that I hope that well, it's an honor to be nominated, right?
It is an honor to be nominated.
Yeah, it is. No, I say that as a joke, but that's, I don't know. It's pretty cool. Like, not to get too sentimental or weird about it, but like, you know, Patrick and I, we're not nominated. SF Signal is nominated and Patrick's nominated over there. But, you know, I think Patrick doing SF Signal is obviously pretty tied to us doing this podcast. That's how that got started. So Patrick and I just sort of started this now over, is it three? We're in our fourth year now. And it was very, you know, just, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it. And we've basically done it every week since then. And it's pretty damn cool that Patrick is getting nominated for Hugo. So I'm delighted that that is happening over at SF Signal. And even if you don't win, I still think it's pretty damn cool.
Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. I had to actually explain it to my bosses because, you know, I left the job from hell. I started the new job, which has been just absolutely wonderful. And they're great people. It's a great company. But one of the things that I said before they hired me is, look, I have this trip planned and I would really like to take it. I understand that it's going to be like within the first 90 days of my employment. I have no illusions whatsoever that you guys would pay me. I'm not accruing any vacation time or anything, but I would really, really appreciate it if I could still take the time off. And they agreed, and so they're, you know, I get to go. But I did have to explain it to them, and then I just had to explain it to them again just yesterday. Basically, they said, could you come in the back office for a second? I said, sure, and I go back there, and they're like, so what's a Hugo? And so I explained, you know, professional categories, fan categories, and all that kind of good stuff. But yeah, it is a huge honor, and it's fun, and it gets you invited to all the cool parties, and yeah. You get to wear the little rocket on your lapel, and you know it's a wonderful experience. And how else would I be in a cocktail party with all these other really cool people? You know, there's not. I normally would not get invited to that. John would totally get invited to that. Mike Cole would be like, come with me, but I'd be sitting on the outside, you know, pressed against the glass, looking in. So.
Were you saying John me or John DiNardo?
John you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just friends with a couple of those people. And you know, I'm not an author, so they're like, yeah, he's not going to bother anybody. So yeah. That's the reason I end up at that stuff. So.
And then it's funny because Anelia goes around the party going, look, I had this idea for a book.
Yeah, I pitch all my book ideas.
Yeah.
I pull Tom Doherty aside. Listen, I got this idea. I'm not a writer, but I have this idea.
It's George R. R. Martin meets Anne Rice.
Yeah, but it's a guitar player, yeah. And
he's a troubadour, and he's on his way to Bombay.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom? All right. Well, that's my impression of what my life is like. Anyway, thanks everybody. David. Thank you for coming on the show again. Really appreciate it. And
thank you so much for having me.
No problem. All right, everyone, have a great week.
Thanks, Mo. I like this say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.